Coming up on Tech News Weekly, I, Micah Sargent, and my co-host Jason Howell have a great show planned. First, we talk to Barry Schwartz of Search Engine Land about Google adding generative AI to its search. That's right, Google search is still important, and it's even more so with those AI sprinkles. Then Abrar Alhiti of CNET stops by to talk about Waymo and its autonomous vehicles. Yes, Abrar takes a ride in one of Waymo's vehicles and talks about a new feature called Safe Exit, so you can leave that vehicle without hitting someone as you get out. Then we round things out with our stories of the week. Jason Howell was at Google I.O. He talks all about that experience, and I talk about Peridot, the latest AR game from Niantic. Stay tuned. It's going to be a great show.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Tech News Weekly, episode 285, recorded Thursday, May 11th, 2023. This episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by ACI Learning. IT skills are outdated in about 18 months, so stay ahead of the curve and strengthen your IT expertise with affordable certification-based learning that will launch or advance your career. Individuals use code TWIT30 for 30% off a standard or premium individual IT pro membership at go.acilearning.com/TWIT.
And by ZocDoc. When you're not feeling your best and just trying to hold it together, finding great care shouldn't take up all of your energy. Go to ZocDoc.com/TNW and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find a top-rated doctor today. Many are available within 24 hours.
Listeners of this program get an ad-free version if they're members of Club Twit. $7 a month gives you ad-free versions of all of our shows, plus membership in the Club Twit Discord, a great clubhouse for Twit listeners. And finally, the Twit Plus feed with shows like Stacey's Book Club, The Untitled Linux Show, The Giz Fizz, and more. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit, and thanks for your support.
Hello, and welcome to Tech News Weekly, the show where every week we talk to and about the people making and breaking the tech news. I am Micah Sargent, coming in from my home office.
Oh, doesn't this sound feel so familiar yet distant at the same time? I'm Jason Howell coming in from my home office, not the corner. This is the downstairs office because I disassembled the corner studio up in our bedroom. So I don't have that anymore. So you have to look at my guitars instead, which is not
cool.
Thing.
Yeah, they're fine.
Okay. So I spent yesterday down in Mountain View, Shoreline Amphitheater, and the Google campus for Google I.O. That's Google's developer conference. Had a ton of fun, which I'm going to actually talk about my experience a little bit later in the show. But if there was any question what was going to come up, and if you had it on your bingo card that Google was going to say AI not once, not twice, but perhaps 1,000 times, then you win the prize because that was top of mind. Artificial intelligence, how it's integrating into Google's products and services. Primarily, I think that was a really big story from I.O. yesterday. And when we think of Google, as we were discussing prior to the show, usually we think of search, but AI has eclipsed search these days, and now it's integrating. So I thought we would bring on Barry Schwartz. Welcome back to the show, CEO of Rusty Brick, contributing editor at Search Engine Land. And Barry, you wrote extensively about these announcements from a few different angles. So first of all, thank you for joining us. It's great to have you back.
It's great to be back. Thank you for having me.
I know you're really busy talking to a lot of people about these announcements, so we appreciate your time. So let's get right to the meat of it. First of all, when it comes to Google's search product and artificial intelligence, like, what are the top line kind of things to know as far as how this generative AI is going to start influencing Google's search product?
Yeah, I mean, so Google announced this as, I guess, their opt-in labs experiment. So it's not something that's live now. You can't really do anything with it. They just demoed it. So first of all, it's going to be in a separate domain name. It's not going to be in google.com. It's going to incorporate, people are saying it's going to incorporate Google Bard. It's not. Bard was kind of its isolated answer for like ChatGPT. This is going to incorporate some other LLML and using MUM and Palm 2, similar to Bard, but it's going to be a generative AI answer in the search results, kind of at the top of the search results. Those answers will include, I guess, like publisher websites, which is great. And it's a kind of like a new user interface for search, something that Google said would be more, I guess, early reports more youthful and generated for a more youthful audience. So Google announced a bunch of things yesterday, and it's a kind of like their answer to what maybe Bing has been doing with Bing Chat. But it's really exciting to see this type of what Google came up with in this answer. It was a big Google Bar was somewhat of a disappointment, but this is definitely something that I think, you know, kind of showed off Google's muscles in AI and search.
Yeah, like I said just a few minutes ago, and from being there, the temperature that I got is that I/O was really about, yes, I mean, it was largely about AI and not just artificial intelligence, you know, with its services, but also, you know, if you checked out the developer portion of the event, like, you know, there's AI chatbots in the Android development tools, like they're bringing AI in, you know, left, right, and center, but how it's integrating with the services that we already use. So I don't have to go to a separate destination in order to use these things. It's already there in Docs, or it's already, in this case, in there in Search. How does that, I mean, I guess Microsoft is doing this with Bing and the chatbot too. Like, if you had to compare the two based on what we know from what Google has revealed about this, like, are they pretty similar products, or is Google doing something that's kind of pushing the boundary by comparison?
So conceptually, it's very similar. Although Bing Chat is kind of its own interface where you go to Bing, you have to click on Bing Chat to actually activate it. And then Bing Chat will incorporate like search results, including local news and other information, including links to publishers as well. Whereas the Google interface, at least how they demoed it, it's not like you initiate it. And Google will automatically show the generative answer through AI directly on top of the search results if it meets certain types of requirements and it's not an area that might be more cautious about Google showing any type of answer there. So it seems like the difference between Google and Bing right now is that Google's, at least in their demo, it's going to be incorporated directly in the search results. Although, again, it's very important to point out, it's not in Google.com. It's not going to launch in Google.com. You have to go to like labs.google.com/search to actually access it and sign up. So it is kind of separate and incorporated. So it's a little bit of a different approach than what Microsoft's doing with Bing Chat.
So you are, in a sense, opting in. You'd have to go to that separate place and say, yes, I'm open to this. I want to see this sort of stuff. Once you've opted in, do you know if then these things just kind of start appearing in the traditional Google search experience, maybe with like a little Labs button or something to like kick off the experience? Is that how it works or will work?
It seems like you're going to have to like toggle on this Labs button at the top right of the page to actually activate it. I'm not sure if it's going to be active forever once you do that, or if you're able to toggle it on and off. I don't know if you have to go to a specific URL always, but we'll see. Google's going to start rolling it out slowly. But right now there's just a wait list for certain countries, I believe.
It's all speculation, right, on a lot of this stuff, but I just have to imagine, you know, Google is hoping this goes incredibly well and it's no longer this experimental thing, which then, you know, who knows how long that's going to take. What Google loves to have their products in beta in some cases for decades, was the case with Gmail. But, do you see, because we don't really see a whole lot of, I'm going to throw it in air quotes, innovation when it comes to Google search, at least user facing, like easy to point at and say, that's a change. That doesn't really happen a whole lot when it comes to Google search. If this is the direction of Google search after so long being used to Google search remaining pretty stable and pretty close to what we come to expect and, you know, over decades of using it, like what is the risk, or is there a risk to that Google faces in bringing a product like this to their tentpole thing, search?
Yeah. So of course there's a risk. I would kind of debate that Google hasn't been innovative in terms of changing things. Honestly, every single week I probably cover like 5 to 20 different things that Google's testing in terms of really drastic changes to the search results interface. Sometimes they launch it, sometimes they don't. And we've seen lots of these changes over the years. The biggest thing obviously was like in 2006, I think universal search was probably the biggest change we've had, but there've been changes since then. Yeah. But of course this is a huge risk. I think that's why they're launching it on a separate like Labs experiment, because the vast majority of the revenue that Google brings in are from those search ads that you click on. Changing that interface could drastically impact how much revenue they're making, and drastically have major impacts on the company's profitability going forward. So Google is, I assume, afraid to change that on Google.com. but they are going to obviously test this in a lab's environment, which they can actually see. Are people clicking on the ads? Are people clicking on the search results? Are people coming back to generate more answers and do more searches? Or are they doing less? So Google's being very, very careful on how they roll this out. But it just, you know, shows that, you know, the rankings, the ads themselves are above the actual generative answers in their demo. I don't know if you could see it in the screenshots. There should be another screenshot there that shows like a sponsor listing on top. Yeah, somewhere there. If you just search for ads, there's a whole new article just on ads. But basically, right. Google's basically placing those ads right above the generative answers. And I think Google's really cautious about how they're releasing this because they don't want to, like, I guess, like you said, tarnish their search results, meaning their ads. I mean, that's the main thing they make their money on. They don't make much money on the other stuff that they talk about. They make some, but 90% of their income is from their search ads.
Yeah, yeah. No, I appreciate your pushing back on innovation. I didn't mean like blanket, you know, blanket wide that the search product doesn't innovate. I know that it does, but you know, it's kind of like in a certain sense, and I don't know if this is a good or a bad thing, but I think of Google search similar to the way I think of the Craigslist experience, right? It was relatively simple at launch, and that was kind of the differentiator for Google search all along is, yeah, you go here, you get your search results. Like there's not a whole lot of other things getting in the way. And I think more or less over time, that's stayed true. You know, there's little value adds, and this is a pretty large value add. So it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, if this eventually becomes like a major, you know, product that is just kind of part of the experience, how that does for Google. Because I mean, you know, at this point, this is another discussion that I heard a lot of people at the conference talking about, you know, Google as a, like a pioneer in the tech industry, like that reputation's kind of tapering off a little bit right now. They're a little less hot now than they were. And so they do need to innovate. There needs to be some sort of thing that puts them kind of in that spot again, at least according to Google. Do you think that's a fair assessment? Do you think that what Google is working on right now has the potential to kind of bring back that spark based on what you've seen?
I think so. I mean, I think they're very cautious about what they were releasing. And I think they were kind of pushed into this from Microsoft and OpenAI. And I think what they demonstrated yesterday really did that. So I do think you're right. I think you're dead on that answer.
So we know kind of roughly how this is going to be found. You know, if someone who is interested, like I know I signed up for onto a wait list for a number of things yesterday in order to get onto this. What are the steps that people have to take in order to kind of get in the ring, so to speak, and check this out for themselves? When are they going to be able to be brought on board? Do we have any information about the kind of timetable of things?
Yeah. So right now, I believe it's only for US English where you can sign up for a wait list. I think it's at labs.google.com/search. You sign up there. You can't sign up under your Google Workspace account. It has to be a Gmail account. Then I think in the coming weeks, Google said like 2-3 weeks, Google will start inviting some of those users, the first batch of those users, hopefully you and me, because we're somewhat press, to be the first people to actually try it out. And I do believe I'm not sure, you know, if how Google will expand it to other places. I assume it will be similar to Bard, where they just announced that Bard has no longer a wait list and they opened up to 180 regions. The question is which regions weren't opened up. And I think one of the reports out there was that your European regions don't have access to Bard because of a lot of legal issues. So it will be interesting to see because all this generative AI stuff and answers, there's all these copyright and legal issues around it. But right at first, it's going to be at labs.google.com/search, sign up for the wait list. And it's for US English users right now, and it has to be a Gmail account that signs up.
Right on. Well, Barry, it's always a great, like a pleasure to bring you on the show. And it's been a little while, so I appreciate you hopping on, taking a few minutes. And I know you've got probably other people to talk to today. Barry Schwartz writes for Search Engine Land. Go there, searchengineland.com. Actually, two very comprehensive articles that Barry posted yesterday that we're talking about today. So you can read even more detail if you go check it out. Barry, thank you. Appreciate talking with you.
Thanks for having me.
See you soon. All right, coming up, kind of an expansion happening with Waymo. And so we're going to dive into that with Abrar Alhiti from CNET, who, by the way, I saw at Google I.O. She says hello. But first, this episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by ACI Learning. IT Pro has provided our listeners with engaging and entertaining IT training for the last decade. You know, you're a fan of the network. You've heard IT Pro all over our network over that time. As part of ACI Learning, IT Pro and ACI Learning are elevating their highly entertaining, bingeable short format content with more than 7,000 hours to choose from. New episodes added daily. ACI Learning provides world-class service from assisting you in choosing which learning path suits you best all the way through helping you find the right career opportunity. So you can fortify your expertise with access to self-paced IT training videos. Do it on your own time. There's also interactive practice labs, certification, practice tests. This stuff gets you ready and keeps you busy. And speaking of busy, life gets busy, right? Super quickly. So learn the way that works for you. Is that at home? Is it at work? Even on the go while you're out and about, you can do that as well. You can check out ACI Learning's practice labs where you can test and experiment before deploying new apps or updates without compromising your live system. So you can get real clear, real solid on it before you go that next step. And you can try out your skills on virtual machine labs with multiple instances of Windows Server, desktop clients on your OS X, Linux, iOS device, and Windows platform. You can take and then retake practice IT certification tests so you're confident when you sit down for that actual exam, things are going to go the way you want them to. ACI Learning brings you IT practice exam questions from Microsoft, CompTIA, EC Council, PMI, and so many more. And you can focus on your future. ACI Learning is with you every step of the way to help you choose the best certifications for your needs. And they have just tons of courses that are extremely popular at ACI Learning. Microsoft Azure Administrator, CompTIA CYSA Plus, Security Plus, and A Plus. Accredited ITIL4 Foundation. There's Cisco CCNA, AWS Certified Cloud Practitioner, and AWS Certified Solutions Architect Associate. I mean, we can go on and on and on. You're going to find exactly what you're looking for. And I should also mention coming up, here very, very soon, Thursday, May 18th, 2 p.m. Eastern, is the All Things Cybersecurity with Naomi Buckwalter. It's a webinar brought to you by IT Pro at ACI Learning. And then on Thursday, May 25th, 2023, that's at 2 p.m. Eastern, is the Cybersecurity Analysts webinar. That's brought to you by the Learning Hubs at ACI Learning, featuring the frontline of the future with Gerald Auger, PhD. And then finally, May 13th and 14th, that's in a couple of days, is ACI Learning's Linux Free Weekend. So much stuff to check out and to get your feet wet, basically. So check it out for yourself. Learn more at ACI Learning's premium training options across audit, IT, and cybersecurity readiness at go.acilearning.com/twit. Individuals can use code TWIT30 for 30% off a standard or premium individual IT Pro membership. That is go.acilearning.com/twit. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Weekly. Now, Micah, it's your turn to talk to Abrar. I talked to her yesterday, so here you go.
Yes. So I was scrolling through, I think, Instagram the other day, and up popped this video of someone getting into a Waymo autonomous driving vehicle. And I realized it was Abrar Alhiti of CNET who had a chance to take one of these vehicles for a ride and test out a new feature. So I emailed and said, hey, will you please join us Thursday? Not realizing that Abrar had just had this whole day of Google I.O. So Abrar, thank you for being here after what was surely a long day yesterday. I really appreciate it.
Oh my God, it's my pleasure. And it was so nice to meet Jason. I was telling him it's weird because I feel like I know both of you. And then I realized it was my first time seeing him in person. So hopefully I'll get to meet you in person very soon. But it's my pleasure to be here.
Yes, I hope so too. So before we get into the details about this specific feature, I was hoping you could tell our listeners a little bit about Waymo, the company.
Absolutely. So Waymo is part of Google's parent company, Alphabet. So this started out as Google's self-driving car project all the way back in 2009. And it's now, you know, its own self-driving company within Alphabet. And their goal is basically to make a, and they've done this really, is making a ride-hailing app that, you know, it works the way that you would use Uber or Lyft, except when the car pulls up, there is no driver in the seat. So you get in this car, you tell it where you need to go, and it takes you there. And there's just nobody there. It's a fully autonomous vehicle. And this is something that they're kind of slowly rolling out in more cities, but it's here in San Francisco. And that's how I got the chance to hop in one.
Wow. Do you know of any other cities that they're currently testing in?
They're also in Phoenix, and they are going to be rolling out in LA. So right now in Phoenix, it's actually open to the public. People can just, anyone can download the app and hop in. And then in LA, they're kind of slowly rolling out. They haven't opened it up to riders yet, but in San Francisco, there's kind of this transition period where if you're in San Francisco, you'll see these cars riding around. And most often there is a driver in the seat still to make sure that everything goes, you know, as planned. And then now they're kind of slowly taking out the driver. So if you can join a wait list and get in one of those cars without a driver in it.
Very cool. Now, I have seen these vehicles driving around for some time, and of course had read about them before that. I know there's a new feature, but I do want to just talk about the experience in general before we get into that. My first question is, what was it like getting into the vehicle? And what was it like getting out of the vehicle? Again, without talking yet about the new feature, just in general, because, you know, typically I think about somebody getting into an Uber and you have the moment of, do I sit in the front if I'm just by myself, or do I get in the back seat? Do I say something to the driver? Are we going to talk about the weather? There's all of this sort of stuff that goes into it. But I noticed in your video, there were chimes and things that would happen at times that kind of made you go, maybe I should be reading what it's saying next, or what is it prompting me to do? So can you just tell us about kind of this initial experience, which of course could change over time as Waymo dials things in?
Absolutely. So this was my first time getting in one of these cars, and I'd been wanting to for a very long time, but it's very interesting because, you know, you have a designated pickup drop-off point. It's not like when your Uber is pulling up and they're kind of in the wrong spot, or you're in the wrong spot and you communicate. It's like the car's in charge here. You need to go where the car is going. So you go where the car is going, you get in the car, and you're right, there's nobody there, and it waits. You look at the screen. Once you're ready to go, you push the start button and then you start driving. And then it feels like a normal ride. I think that's the thing that was so interesting to me. It's not like it's going to feel any different, but I think just experiencing it and realizing it felt like a smooth drive. The car knew where it was going, where it needed to be, where to turn. And then you look over and there's nobody in the driver's seat. And it's really hard to kind of rewire your brain and think it's doing what it needs to do without a human doing it. That it's very bizarre. But it was very smooth. I felt very safe, even though it was my first time. I felt very safe. There was no point where I felt like, oh, this was a bad idea. So I'm very glad about that. And then it gets to your drop-off point and you exit the vehicle, and it's very, just a very smooth, straightforward process.
Nice. Now, you did talk about one moment where another driver on the road kind of did something unpredictable. Can you tell us about that experience and how the Waymo vehicle responded to that moment?
The true test for me was the intersection. So you get to a four-way stop sign and, you know, people can sometimes miss their cue. It might be their time to go, but they didn't go. And so the car, you know, we were at the stop sign and the car to our left, it was their turn to go and they didn't go. And the car waited. Like it was so amazing to me that it can kind of, you know, tell who's supposed to be going. And if they didn't go, I should wait, and I'm going to wait until they do what they need to do. And that was really, I think that was really the true test for me of like, okay, I can breathe. We know what we're doing.
Yeah, because you get into this vehicle and again, you know, you don't have that person in the front. And so I was kind of curious about how you felt about that. And you told us a little bit about it, but there's maybe in the moment of feeling like you have less control, even though there, you know, you don't necessarily have more control if there's a human being in the front. Can you talk about what controls you actually did have in the vehicle? For example, if you get in and the Waymo vehicle starts making it super hot and you're sweating and then the windows roll up and you're like, oh no, what's going on here? What did you have control over in the vehicle?
I was really curious about that too, because it's not like you can tell the driver, hey, I'm feeling a little warm, can we turn up the AC? There's actually a screen in the back and in the front where, as the rider, you can, you know, do the temperature controls, you can change the temperature as needed. I think a really important button that was there that also made me feel better was there's an option to ask the car to pull over. So if you need to just stop, if you need to just pull over for a second, you can tap that button and it'll pull over for you. Because again, who are you going to tell? It's not like you're going to, you know, tell anyone or climb in the front seat and do it yourself. So, that was very helpful to know that that button exists. And there's also, if you run into issues, you can also tap for rider support.
Got it. And when you do that, is it suddenly a little chat and there's a keyboard, or do you know, is it voice in the car?
Yeah. So when you tap for rider support, someone immediately calls in and is like, hey, this is, you know, so-and-so with Waymo, just making sure everything's okay. And you just talk to them.
Very cool. Very cool. And then it makes me wonder, going into San Francisco regularly, I can never find place to park. Does this vehicle know how to parallel park?
So I did not have the opportunity to put it to the true test of parallel parking between cars. The drop-off points that I ended up being dropped off at and picked up at were just like the curb. So it just pull over to a curb, an empty spot there. But I'm very curious about that because I've seen a lot of videos online, especially with like Cruise, because Cruise is another autonomous car company that's ramping up in San Francisco, where it just like doesn't, it's still figuring it out. You know, it could be a busy street and it's like, I'm going to pull over here, but then the cars are with humans are confused. So that's going to be another really true test, is with parallel parking, when you do have to go in a tighter spot, what it's going to do then.
Interesting. Now, your video did specifically cover a new feature called Safe Exit. So let's talk about Safe Exit.
Right. So Safe Exit. So if you think about it, you're in a car and, you know, sometimes when you're in somebody else's car and you're about to get out from the back seat, they'll tell you, oh, watch out, there's a biker coming, or watch out, there's a car coming. When there's no driver, who's going to tell you that? So what Safe Exit does is it basically does that work for you. So using the same sensors that are built into the car to help it navigate the streets, it uses those, the LiDAR, radar, and cameras to detect if there's a car coming, if there's a pedestrian coming, or if there's a cyclist coming. So if there is, then you'll get a little alert. There'll be an audio alert as well as a visual alert that'll tell you, car approaching, cyclist approaching, pedestrian approaching. And so that way, before you get out of the car, before you open the door and door somebody or get hurt yourself, it'll ding, and then you'll know to just wait before you exit the vehicle.
Got it. So this is not only protection for you, but also for these presumably expensive vehicles that Waymo itself has. I remember reading about different autonomous vehicles, and in their sort of releases about the data regarding their safety on the road, any of the accidents within the past however many years it's been running have all had to do with either incredibly minor things where it was a door ding, or it was the error of another vehicle that either ran into the vehicle itself. Or so I'm not surprised to see this technology being used in a way that is A, helpful to the person that's inside that's riding, but also I can't imagine how incredibly awkward I would feel if I started opening the door and then it got taken off by a car. And then you're just like, well, now what do I do? Do I call that number? What? Oh, this is going to be so awkward. Oh, this is a nightmare.
Oh, absolutely. Good.
Yeah, it's kind of
absolutely. And I think,
here's me.
Yeah. No. And I think the other part of that is like, as a rider and you're like already feeling anxious about getting in a car without a driver in it. And I think knowing that, like, at least that's one piece of it that hopefully you won't have to worry about is dooring somebody or breaking the car. So maybe that'll make people feel a little bit at ease.
Yeah. Now, with this technology, you mentioned in the video that there are other vehicles that do something similar. But the vehicles that have some sort of warning features, the little, even just the little light on the rear view mirror, they don't have all of the giant contraptions that are all over the Waymo vehicle. What is the difference between something that's built into a car that a person is meant to drive versus all of those contraptions that are all over the Waymo vehicle. For folks who are going, why does Waymo need to have all of these devices spinning around on the outside of it?
Right. And the devices spinning around look a little goofy. I totally feel that. So with cars, so Kia has something called the safe exit feature as well. And basically what that does is it, you know, will ding on your dashboard. It'll show that there's a car coming or a cyclist approaching. And you'll also know not to open the doors then. The thing about Waymo is it has a wider scope. So it can tell you much earlier what's coming. It'll show it on the screen. And also there's at the top of the car, there's a little screen at the top where if people are on the outside, if there's a cyclist approaching or there's a pedestrian approaching, they'll see a little icon there that has an image of somebody getting out of the car. And I don't know if people will notice that because people don't know to look there yet. I think, you know, people wouldn't know that that's where they should be looking. But I guess as these cars continue to roll out and become, you know, a bit more widespread, people might know like, okay, I noticed that light. I noticed that somebody's about to get out of the car. So like heads up for me as well.
Honestly, I'm really glad that you explained that just now, because I have to say that I was watching the video and then it got to the end and you're like, and see, and it shows you right there. And I looked at it and I'm like, what is it showing me though? So you explaining now, it was a person getting out of a car, like with the car door. Oh, yes. Okay. I get it now.
Yeah, it's so, not that intuitive, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I'll know in the future. Wow. I will drop things in my hand. Now I will know in the future to look up at that thing to see, okay, I should not try to drive my bicycle past the Waymo at this time. I guess to round things out, anything else you want to share about your experience? And do you foresee yourself maybe if Waymo comes to your city nearby, do you foresee yourself hailing a driverless car over a, I guess, drivered car?
I think I was pleasantly surprised at how comfortable it was. I am kind of eager to keep trying to, you know, use this and other services that continue to roll out. I think it's really great that it's, you know, in San Francisco and I have access to it, but I think it's also great because San Francisco is such a busy and diverse city when it comes to the ways that people get around. And so if it works in San Francisco and it can navigate these absolutely wild streets, then I feel better that other cities, you know, it won't be as difficult for this to roll out there as well. But I think there are times where a human is beneficial. And I think, you know, and that's the other part of it. Is, you know, jobs, right? That's the conversation that's ongoing. What are drivers going to do if these cars continue to roll out? That's definitely something to explore and to consider. But there are times where you're like, I don't necessarily feel like having a conversation right now. And I would love to just get in a car and get from point A to point B. And so to have that option as a ride hailing choice, I think that will open a lot of doors. And I am curious to keep trying and see where this technology goes.
Yeah, absolutely. I will definitely continue watching that spot and hopefully get the opportunity to ride in one myself. Abrar Alhiti, thank you again for joining us today. If folks want to follow you online and check out all your great work, where should they go to do so?
You can follow me on Twitter at @Alhiti_3 or on Instagram. It's just my full name, Abrar Alhiti. And thank you so much for having me. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
And yes, thank you so much for being here today. We appreciate it. All righty. Up next, Jason attended Google I/O in person this week. He's going to talk about his experience. I'm really looking forward to hearing about that. But first, this episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by ZocDoc. There's nothing worse than having to go to a doctor appointment expecting that you are going to be the center of attention. You know, you've booked this appointment. The person on the other end has agreed to this appointment and you expect you walk in, you talk about the issues that you're experiencing. You hear from what the doc, it's a back and forth, but there's nothing worse than your doctor seeming like they have better things to do and better places to be. And they're sort of looking at their watch and looking at the door and wondering when you're going to get over whatever it is you're talking about. Get through with it. No, instead of listening to you intently, asking you how you feel and helping you along, the doctor is looking at that watch. On ZocDoc, though, you can find quality doctors who focus on you, who listen to you, who prioritize your care. Because these are patient-reviewed doctors. ZocDoc is the only free app that lets you find and this is the thing, and book doctors who are patient reviewed, take your insurance, are available when you need them, and treat almost every condition under the sun. When you're not feeling your best, you're just trying to hold it together, you know, you're under the weather and you don't really have the energy to do all of that extra work, finding great care shouldn't take up all of your energy. And that is where ZocDoc comes in. Using their free app that millions of users rely on, you can find the right doctor that meets your needs and fits in your schedule. So book an appointment with a few taps in their app and start feeling better with ZocDoc. I think this is such a great service that you can not just find the doctor you're looking for or the medical professional that you're looking for, but actually book them right there. Go to ZocDoc.com/TNW and download the ZocDoc app for free. And listen, I know you out there, very smart, very intelligent, very adept at mobile devices. Please don't just open the App Store, the Google Play Store, and type in ZocDoc. Please go to that URL. That way they know that you heard about it on the show. Then you'll get to that app. So download the ZocDoc app for free at zocdoc.com/TNW. Download the app and find a top-rated doctor today. Many are available within 24 hours. That's zocdoc.com/TNW. And thank you, ZocDoc, for sponsoring this week's episode of Tech News Weekly. All right, Jason, it's time to talk about Google I.O.
All right. I'm happy to do it, too, because this is a whirlwind 24 hours, I have to say. Tuesday, we had our regular episode of All About Android, twit.tv/AAA. And you want to check it out because it was me, my host, co-host Ron Richards, Wintuit Dao, and Michelle Ramon all in studio. They all made the drive up to Petaluma. And so we did an awesome episode from the studio together, which there's never been Wynn in the studio or Michelle and all four, and Ron rarely comes to the Bay Area anymore. Maybe he'll come more now that he's being invited to Google I.O. again. But anyways, it was a heck of a lot of fun. It was Ron's birthday, so we celebrated that as well as Florence Ion's birthday. But anyways, that was just the beginning. And then the next day, so that evening drove down to Mountain View, checked in the hotel, woke up very early the next morning and made my way to Shoreline for the event. Now, Google I.O. in years past prior to COVID was a multi-day event. I would go down there Tuesday evening and I'd come back like Friday night. Like it was just like 3 days. It was a long time to be there, but it was a lot of fun, but it was also, could be very tiring and everything. And then of course, as with everything, COVID happened. It forced companies to figure something out. And so of course, Google I.O. ended up being an online thing, online only. And now this is the second year where they've opened it up to a single day event. And I just have to say from my experience, many years going to a multi-day event and then now going to a single day event, I kind of like it. Like it's actually really nice because it really kind of kept things focused. You still got the benefit of the experience being there going, oh, hey, I haven't seen you in a really long time. You got that social element, got a little bit of that excitement. But then what it gives Google the ability to do, and I actually talked to a couple of Googlers while I was down there who are planning these IOs. And they basically said we always saw IO as this like, you got to be here to get the full effect sort of thing. But then I.O. forced us to kind of reimagine it as here's everything online for everyone, completely accessible. And they just said our engagement with all of this has skyrocketed as a result. And they're like, at the end of the day, we want everybody to know what we know and what we want to communicate. So this seems like the most effective way. So that tells me this is likely, I don't have any certainty on this, but this is likely the way it's going to be with Google I.O. going forward. But I know that everybody at the studio, Leo and Jeff Jarvis, did some live coverage of the event. We had the keynote, as we talked about earlier with Barry Schwartz. Artificial intelligence, probably spoken 1,000 times. I was joking with Ron that, we should get a transcript of the keynote, run it through Google Bard, and ask Bard to tell us how many times was the term AI used, and see what number it gives us. But like I said earlier, it really seemed like the big story here was, yes, artificial intelligence, which we all kind of expected to be the case, but not just that, but artificial intelligence as it integrates into the products and services that you're already using. And I think that's the potential power that Google has, right? Where so many of us use and rely on Google services, their products, Gmail, it had one, what was it called? Write for Me, or I can't remember. It was something along those lines where essentially you kind of type in a little short, brief thing like, I want to write an email to so-and-so about this, blah, blah, blah. I want to be sure to mention the blah, 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 blah. And then it, you know, it will generate your email for you. And if it's too short, if it's too brief, you can have it expand and it'll broaden it out and add more detail and everything. It's just like, I hate to say it, but I'm probably going to use that for at least some of correspondence. Cause why the heck not, you know, check it out and try it. I don't know. You know, some of the integrations with Google Sheets and being able to very easily, you know, tell it, you know, create a, I want a spreadsheet that itemizes, you know, all of the many dog sitter options in the area and the ones that are able of taking two or more dogs and love chihuahuas and create a spreadsheet out of it and with pricing and sort it. And, you know, you tell it these things and boop, you end up with it without having to do the hard work. I find that compelling. I think a lot of people
are making fun of it though.
What do you think, Micah?
So I find that part compelling. The only, well, I can't say this for sure because I didn't watch every minute of it, but the one thing that stood out to me that had me not happy or excited was talking about AI and its inclusion in text messages. I don't like the idea of two people just having false conversations, basically letting AI just have a conversation with another AI instead of you both getting to just talk to each other. That really was kind of a problem for me. And then I've talked about this in the past. The same thing I feel applies to instances where, in many cases, not in every case, but in many cases where they showed like a manager formatting an email saying, write up a congratulations to my team.
Yeah.
Can you not in your heart? Wow. Yeah. If you can't build that in your heart, then don't congratulate your team.
Yeah.
That just feels inauthentic. And so the chance for, I don't care, it doesn't have to be Google's AI, it could be any AI. The chance for AI to sort of cheapen communication with others, I'm not fond of that idea. And but at the same time, what I am fond of is what we're seeing Google do here, which is get AI, and by AI I mean generative AI, closer to our operating systems, having it built in to Android or built into workspace OS essentially. Is what I want to see from artificial intelligence, because from generative artificial intelligence, because there's a lot of heavy lifting that I do right now to get the generative AI I'm using to do things that I'm asking it to do. So I have to do a lot of explaining and context and that kind of thing to actually get the response I'm looking for. But if it already has that context by being built in closer to the system, that's going to be, I think, very helpful. So I think there are many ways this can be taken, and it seems like they're doing a lot of spaghetti projects. They're trying a bunch of different stuff to see, and that's fine to see what people use. I just really hate the idea of, instead of me texting someone happy birthday, I have my AI system for the rest of the year send out all my happy birthday messages. That's sad. Yeah.
I mean, it's really what you're talking about is the lessening of the human element of the ways we communicate. And I think that's a big picture criticism of AI in general is, wait a minute, it's removing the elements, has a potential of removing the elements of life, of our everyday life that are based around our humanity, and putting it in the hands of the robot or the computer or whatever you want to call it. And what does that do to us just as humans, like on this planet with other humans? I mean, it has a potential to cheapen that experience and make things a whole lot less authentic as a result.
Yeah. So. And then I'm looking at messages and being suspicious of them. did this person actually say this to me, or was it generated by a machine? Mm-hmm. And
I will also say, though, like I even in my text messages now, and we've had this for a few years, if my wife sends me a message like, hey, can you be sure to pick up some milk on the way home? It gives me that little prompt to say yes. And I do tap it, as opposed to just typing yes. You know what I mean? So there are ways in which we are okay with it.
Yeah, but I don't think that's helpful.
This is like generating a whole thread versus like a couple of words, you know. So where are the differences? I think we're figuring that out.
Yeah.
So that's one thread, of course, of Google I/O. While I was there, I did get a chance to play around a little bit with the Pixel Fold, which is Google's new foldable device. So I got, you know, spent probably like 5 minutes with that in the press area, and very nicely built device. Feels really nice. You know, it is a Gen 1 product. No matter how you slice it, it just is. I didn't see anything other than this is a little weird when you flatten it the way you're seeing right now, and I didn't get a picture of it. It's not completely flat. It's not 100% flat.
Oh,
it's
got
a
really tiny
little bit of a bend in the hinge. Not quite like that. That was done for artistic purposes. But yes,
so it's like a V, but just it's a very obtuse angle, right?
I mean,
no way.
Yeah. I mean, it's hardly perceptible, but if you lay it on the table, you see that it's not laying flat completely. It's just slightly domed.
Interesting. So
that's a little weird because I don't feel like the other foldables do that. And it's like, okay, well, you know, I had heard all this pre-release news and rumors about how great the hinge system is, but why not that? Like, you want this to be a tablet experience when it's open. Most tablets don't have a slight kind of curvature to it that's, you know, down the middle. So anyways, maybe that's nitpicking, but that does feel very first gen. And for an $1,800 device, would I spend $1,800 on a phone? I don't think I would. Would you? I mean, we're in a weird bubble. You get devices because of work, but I would not spend
$1,800. Yeah, no, I don't believe in foldable phones. By that, I mean, I know they exist. I believe in their existence. I don't believe in the need for foldable phones. I don't think that they are, and I will happily eat my hat, 10 years from now, if foldables are what we're using, but I just don't find it compelling as a technology. And I don't see a whole lot of people, everyday people, finding it compelling as a technology, which I understand part of that is the price. That definitely makes a difference. Yeah. But I remember so many people getting the first iPhone, and that was very expensive at the time, but people still in swarms got the first iPhone. So to consider this sort of like the next evolution in smartphones, I don't think it's caught on that way. You don't see people scrambling to get it. And in fact, I see so many people who do choose to be early adopters as quick as they can returning these things, realizing they don't need them or want them.
Mm-hmm. Trying to figure out like why. I mean, in the times that I've had for review any of these foldables, I am trying hard to find the situations where I want to open it up, you know, and those moments do happen, but do they happen enough that I'm willing to spend $1,800 on it? Personally, not true for me, but I am curious to get my hands on the Pixel Fold. I hope that I can get one for review here very soon. Also, the Pixel Tablet, they had that there. That I felt like was actually a pretty positive announcement. $500, I feel like, is fair considering you get that dock. If the dock was extra, if that snapping like magnetic speaker dock was another $150, I'd be really hesitant on it. But I think as a total package for $500 and the build quality was really nice. Turning it when you snap it on, it's really satisfying when it snaps onto the base. It's like got this little magnetic pull that just like there's no misaligning it with the pogo pins on the back. It knows exactly where to go. It's just, it's a cool product. I think that the Pixel Tablet is going to reinvigorate the Android tablet ecosystem? I don't necessarily know that I trust that that's exactly what's going to happen, but I understand why Google wants to do this. You know, Google really wants to create devices that demonstrate the stuff that they're doing with the software and the OS. And so this gives them kind of their own playing field to do that and to be the signal, the beacon for other hardware manufacturers to do similar things. So I'm very curious about the Pixel tablet and getting my hands on that.
I think it's so cool.
Did you like that? Or because I mean, it was amazing.
Think of
tablet, I think of iPad. I just think that, you know what, iPad won the game. And
you're not wrong in that. But when I think of smart home speaker, I think of either or Amazon or Google. I think they both have a good. In fact, let me see. I'm always moving my shoulder the wrong way. That is a Nest Hub right behind me.
Oh, okay.
And it's a great digital picture frame. And this idea of, like, I wish that I could just grab that and take it off and do things with it and put it back. When that is just, it's a very smart idea. I think that even though, I'm not obviously a regular Android user and don't have any interest in like making that switch, I do think that the idea is very sound and their execution is really spot on. I think they did a great job with the execution. So I'm really impressed with it, even if it doesn't become, you know, if it doesn't reinvigorate the tablet market or anything like that. It's just, I think for people who like Nest Hubs, then they kind of get that benefit of, oh, and at any time I could take this and then, you know, show somebody that video that I thought was funny that I was talking about. Or I just think it's very smart.
Yeah. So looking forward to that. I think the highlight of my time, though, was something that I did not expect to be there, but I actually had on my short list of, if they have these things here, I would love for this to be there. And that was Project Starline. Starline, if you remember, a couple of years ago was announced, and this is the booth. Back then, a couple of years ago, it was like a whole booth system where they demonstrated. It's essentially video conferencing where you really feel when you're looking in the screen, like it's large enough and the way it's presented and, you know, it's all done in three-dimensional, a view. You really feel like that person is right there and, you know, it's full eye contact and everything. And I got 5 minutes in there with one of the co-founders, the co-creators of this technology. And it was like, it gives me goosebumps talking about it because do I think that we're going to see these things everywhere? Not necessarily, but 2 years ago, it was huge technology that was incredibly expensive. And now what they were kind of showing off is that, you know, 2 years of development, they've created a single screen with cameras that kind of flank the screen. And it's just become a lot more doable, a lot more miniaturized. And the effect was really impressive. The screen was very large. It looked like, you know, I was sitting there talking to the co-founder. I wish I could remember his name. I should have written that down before this show, but talking to him through it. At one point, he holds up an Apple and he's like, so what does this, you know, look like to you? And I swear I could have reached out and grabbed that Apple. And instead he put out his fist and he was like, give me a fist bump. And I did. And my brain was like weirded out about the fact that I wasn't feeling a fist when I did that. Like it looked that like the dimensionality of it was really crazy. And,
so is it a hologram?
No, it's just like a 3D. It's just. What it is a giant screen. I mean, it's, you know, a giant screen that's having some sort of parallax 3D view technology. You have to be right in the right sweet spot in order to get the effect. The other thing that I thought was interesting, another detail is, yes, it's a screen, but the bottom third of the screen, there's this border that kind of curves out towards you. And from my position, what it meant is I didn't see the bottom of the screen. I saw this like curved border that seemed to be a border that, that the 3D image resided inside of. So instead of me looking at this and going, oh, this is a screen that's 3D, it just kind of seemed like I was looking through a window because it kind of cut off that bottom part of the screen. And it was a really cool illusion. Like if that wasn't there, I'm sure it would have been neat too. But because it was there, it made it less like I'm looking at a screen. I will say it was very strange because It forces, like, it basically, when you're looking straight ahead, there is no camera that's looking right at you. And so the fact that you are making eye contact with the other person, that's generated because of these different cameras at different angles processing the eyeball forward. And doing that, like having that experience with a screen where we were just like connecting eyes and everything like that, was on one hand really cool, but on another hand, I wanted to look away. I was like kind of uncomfortable by it. It was like, I can do eye contact, you know, in conversation. I have no problems with that. But there, it was just different to have eye contact with a screen. It was just really strange, but very cool. I was super floored actually by that demonstration and so happy they had it there so that I could check it out.
Wow, that's what I wanted to hear about the most. So it is cool to hear about it. For yeah, sure. Just that super experience.
Neat. Yeah, it was fun, and I felt lucky because they were booked up and they were able to kind of fit me in, and I wasn't thinking that it was going to happen, but they did. So thank you to the Starline team. Do not miss. We did an interview, a sit down interview with Dave Burke, VP of Engineering at Google, and Samir Samat, VP of Product Management. That was me, Ron, and Wynn. The All About Android team, talking with them about a lot of the Android related announcements. Yes, some of the artificial intelligence stuff, the devices and everything. twit.tv/news391 if you want to check out that interview. And yeah, that was my time at Google I/O.
Very cool. That sounds very exciting.
It was fun.
All right. My story of the week is about Niantic or Niantic or the company that made that makes Pokemon Go has released a brand new game called Peridot. And in Peridot, you are the owner of a virtual pet. It's like Tamagotchi, but augmented reality and on your phone. It is a cute little game where you hatch your own little creature and you can move around with it in the world, have it sort of dig for food and little games that it can play, and you can customize the look and feel of your Peridot. And as you interact with it and it gets to know you and you get to know it, then it will sort of change its behavior. You can pet your little Peridot by moving your finger across the screen. For anyone who's ever played Nintendogs on the Nintendo DS, you may be familiar with some of the mechanisms because they remind me a lot of that, where you would take the stylus and move it across the dog's head and then it would sort of make sounds and then do some little barks and spin around and whatnot. It is like Niantic has just figured out a sort of mechanism of game and then applies it across different properties. And so it's going to be pretty similar if you've ever played Pokemon Go or that Harry Potter game that once existed, in the sense that you know, it's tied to GPS coordinates. And so there are different areas that are going to have, they call them surfaces, that are going to have different objects that you're Peridot can dig up. Your Peridot will ask to go on walks, and so you can actually have your phone out and walk your Peridot along with you. I can't remember if I said you can have it fetch. It does a whole bunch of different stuff. And this was a game that the company had announced quite a while ago that it would eventually be coming out, and then in the lead up to that lets you sort of pre-order it. And so I did get the game on the first day that it came out and tried it out, you know, made my little Peridot. These games have really never been for me. The games where you have to check in or else, you know, bad things happen, or not necessarily bad things happen, but you know, there's a meter and it's tied to real life time. And so if you don't check back in, then your meter drops all the way to the bottom and you've got, you know, work to do. So that's just not my style of game. But if that is your style of game, you may like Peridot. It is available on multiple platforms. You know, I think they really do want to try to make this successful in the sense that, you know, get it out to as many people as possible, so that everybody can try it out and get hooked on it. And I forgot to mention the technology that Niantic uses. It's called Lightship. And so this technology is what they use to figure out the different types of surfaces in the different areas whenever you're using it. And it is on the App Store. It's on the Google Play Store. So you can get it in both places, and you can take little photos of your creature out in the world. And yeah, well worth checking out. It's available for free, at least I know, in the App Store. And then there are in-app purchases that will give you the ability to buy, you know, item packs that you can add special hats and colors and whatnot to your Peridot. But you don't need to buy the packs to be able to play the game. It is not sort of it's not entirely a free-to-play mechanism or anything like that. But a secondary story to this is one that was fascinating to me because I think of how we are rumored to be seeing the next take on augmented and virtual reality with Apple. And so I'm not surprised to see companies really trying to make their stake, you know, stake their claim rather in the AR, VR, mixed reality area in different ways. And one of those companies is Amazon. So Amazon has announced a new feature called Amazon Anywhere. And what Amazon Anywhere is, it's kind of hard to sort of describe, because the idea is it's specific to kind of AR, VR, virtual worlds, video games, mobile apps. In those experiences, you can tie your Amazon account to that app or that game and then buy things that you get in the real world. Okay. So think about playing, we'll go with Assassin's Creed. And while you're playing, you get a new, shield, and on the shield, there's a crest. And then it's the potential that Amazon, you could, while you're playing the game, order a notebook that has that crest on it, or a shirt that has that crest on it. In Peridot, this game, if you tie your Amazon account to it, then you can order merchandise that has your Peridot, and also just sort of Peridot, general Peridot merchandise while you're in the game. So there are shirts, there are pop sockets, there are throw pillows, there are hoodies, all sorts of different clothing and merchandise that you can order while you're playing the game. And this is just the kind of the first example of Amazon using Amazon Anywhere, but this just launched. Let's see, it launched earlier this week. Amazon Anywhere did, and as I mentioned, although you know Niantic seems to be the first kind of example of this, I'm not surprised to see Amazon staking its claim in what they call immersive shopping. So they have people with VR headsets on who are tapping a VR button to add stuff to their cart, integrated shopping directly in apps, real-time pricing and shipping all built in. And then they show an app at the top of the screen that has maybe it's your favorite yoga app. And so you go to start your yoga class, and then it says, oh, for this yoga class, you need some yoga blocks to complete it. You can buy these with Amazon. So yeah, Amazon is really making sure that our yeah. And they're really making sure that the virtual space that, you know, we're all talking about getting into, and the AR space, are all slapped with Amazon advertisements, it seems.
If Amazon wasn't already everywhere, now it is.
Yeah. If it's not everywhere, it's anywhere.
Yeah, right. Wow. That's interesting.
I can imagine you mom, I want to get my pet on my shirt. I want to get a hat with my pet on it, you know,
or certainly, yeah. Gamers have an affinity, you know, have shown to have an affinity for the general kind of the games that they're playing anyways, for characters and everything. It probably takes it even further when that's like, when that's specific to your own characters, not just Zelda, but it's your pet that you've, you know, been working on growing and cultivating for 5 months now. And it's like, well, yeah, it's cute and it's very tailored to me. No one else has this thing. I want to get, that's actually really smart. That makes
it is very smart. It's very smart.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of Zelda, by the way, the new Zelda game is coming out. I don't know if you're a Zelda fan. I haven't played many of the previous Zeldas, but I keep hearing that The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, which I think comes out this weekend, is no pun intended, a game changer.
This Friday.
So that's tomorrow.
Is going to be to Tears of the Kingdom, and it's going to be glorious. Yeah. It's going to be great. I'm going to be gone. No one can contact me.
Well, there's God, somebody who's excited about
it. off the grid and on into the Zelda. Yeah, you're not alone, John. I spoke to a few people yesterday that they were like, yeah, it's all I'm doing this weekend is playing Zelda. So big game weekend, whether you're playing Zelda or whether you're playing Peridot.
Playing with your little Peridot.
Is it out?
No, it is. It's out. Yeah. It is, okay. I hatched my Peridot on Tuesday. And I haven't opened the app since. That's why I said these games are not for me.
Before you grow your affinity for your Peridot enough to get a shirt. But when you do, please wear that shirt on an episode of Tech News Weekly.
I will have to do that. It'll have an unhappy face because I haven't fed it in 3 weeks, unfortunately. Right. This is why I can't play these games. They just make me feel bad, and then I just get rid of the app.
Totally. I'm not the same way. Well, everybody, it's been a lot of fun. We've reached the end of this episode of Tech News Weekly. We do record this show every Thursday. So every week, twit.tv/TNW. Go there, subscribe. And that's really, that's all you need to know as far as the instructions on how to keep this show going and how to keep yourself entertained by the stuff we do.
And if you would like to get all of our shows ad-free, we've got a way for you to do that. It's called Club Twit at twit.tv/clubtwit. Starting at $7 a month or $84 a year, you out there can join the club. When you join the club, you get a lot of great stuff. First, you get every single Twitch show with no ads. It's all the content, none of the ads, because you, in effect, are sponsoring the shows. You are the support. We also have the Twit Plus bonus feed that has extra stuff you won't find anywhere else. Behind the scenes, before the show, after the show, special events that are specific to the club, all sorts of great stuff there. And access to the members-only Discord server, a fun place to go to chat with your fellow Club Twit members and also those of us here at Twit. All of that is available starting at $7 a month, $84 a year. And I say that starting at not because it goes up based on what you want to get. It's that some folks wanted to pay more than $7 a month because they felt like the value was there. So we gave people that option. So you only have to pay $7 a month. If you want to pay more, you can. And we thank you to those of you who have done that. And we thank you to those of you who haven't, who are just Club Twit subscribers at all. We appreciate you so much. Along with that, we continue to try to make the club more valuable. And we're doing that in part by adding more awesome stuff. You get Club Twit exclusive shows when you join the club. There's the Untitled Linux Show, which is a show all about Linux. We also have Paul Thurrott's Hands on Windows program. It is a short format show that talks about Windows tips and tricks. There's my show, Hands on Mac, which covers all things Apple, also a short format show, meaning that, you know, it's about a specific topic. You dig into that specific topic and you have learned something new. And the newly relaunched Home Theater Geeks featuring Scott Wilkinson. Yes, the show is back. It's part of the club and folks are loving it. So please consider joining the club, getting all of those great shows as part of your subscription. And of course, that warm, fuzzy feeling you get for being a subscriber. Thank you, supporters. We appreciate you. I should mention that if you want to follow me online, you can find me at Micah Sargent on many a social media network, or you can head to chihuahua.coffee. That's chihuahua.coffee, where I've got links to many of the places I'm most active online. Check me out later today if you are a Club Twit member for Hands on Mac, as that show publishes later today. On Sundays, you can call in and ask the tech guys. Leo Laporte and I take your questions and answer them live on air and do a bunch of other stuff too. It's a pretty great variety show. And then on Tuesdays, you can check out iOS Today, which I co-host with Rosemary Orchard, where we talk all things iOS and Apple's other platforms. Jason Howell, what about you?
Well, you can find me at twit.social/@Jason Howell on Mastodon, at Jason Howell on Twitter. I'm on Blue Sky. Just, I can't remember the name of that, but search for my name and you'll probably find me. All About Android, twit.tv/AAA every Tuesday. And like I already said earlier, definitely check out this week's episode. It was a lot of fun. Don't miss the IO interview, twit.tv/news. And then, yeah, not a whole lot else to report there. But big thanks to everyone at the studio for helping out. I know John Ashley is there. Anthony's behind the scenes. I think Ant was helping out today.
Yeah, thank you, Ant.
So thank you, everyone, for helping out. We couldn't do the show without you. And we couldn't do it without you, dear listener and watcher of this fine podcast. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time on Tech News Weekly. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here. In case you hadn't heard, Home Theater Geeks is back. Each week, I bring you the latest audio-video news, tips and tricks to get the most out of your AV system, product reviews, and more. You can enjoy Home Theater Geeks only if you're a member of Club Twit, which costs $7 a month. Or you can subscribe to Home Theater Geeks by itself for only $2.99 a month. I hope you'll join me for a weekly dose of Home Theater Geekitude.